Mr. Boyne, Real 11. Now, we're looking in general terms at the fighting following Goodwood and leading up to the Falaise, closing the Falaise gap, or not closing it, and then the advance to Amiens, which was very quick. And you're just making some general points.
The infantry, we knew they were coming for some reason. We had warning that they were coming down this particular area that we were skipping.
This is when you opened fire with the Browning.
And we were formed up in front of the hedge, fairly well camouflaged, because the hedge gave you reasonable cover, but they'd also got vehicles on the side of this field. And so the infantry were coming down, and they were entering what was presumably like a box. So they got it from virtually three sides, which that really decimated them. So they took the air casualties from that. But that was one of the few times I remember them visibly seeing them running about that close.
What about, you'd still be going back to Lager every night, would you?
Well, we just come up every night, most nights. Only being left on the Via Road, they left us out there, but then in the morning you'd go back to the Lager, to the fuel would be left for you there. But most nights you'd Lager up, usually dark by the time you got there, and this must have been about 11 o'clock. Past 11 at night, then the fuel would come up, water, and the rest of the evening is your own.
And what about rations? How would that
come up? Okay, rations, that would come up with the echelon, and they'd kick these boxes out of the back, you'd have them on the back table, and they were letter A to K, I think it was. Each one held meat and veg, and the pudding. I think somewhere I said there that the one that was favourite was the old corned beef, because you could eat that any time. That was popular.
Would you heat them up
No. Some used to eat these meat and vegetables cold. I mean, I never could. But bloody beef, and biscuits or whatever. You get by on that. And one had even tin fruit, that was a real gem, that was, if you got some tin fruits, because that could be a bit easy. Bit of butter in it.
And what about brewing up, either in or around the tank? Because that seems to be very important to tank crews.
Absolutely, You had a stove, but invariably we used to get the flimsy tins and cut them, make a hole in them and put a loop, and fill that with sand, wherever you could get sand. Then you'd pour petrol into that and set that alight. That would burn for a while. And get another tin with water in it, and then you could make your brew from that. Or water, you could put these tins of veggie in the hot water to warm them up.
And would you ever heat tea in the tank itself?
No.
You weren't supposed to, but some crews did.
Some did, some did. Some did. Yeah. but usually, there were times you were happy to get out, because you remember you were cooped up in these things for something like 18 hours, I suppose. So, and sitting in one position for that time, you were glad to get out. So, when there was a lull, you'd get out and stretch your leg. But we always used to brew out at the back of the tank, under the engine covers, virtually at the back, between the rear the tracks. Yeah, there was a little niche that you could get in there, brew it up. But the times that you've got a brew almost there, and then the order would come, move on, it was almost a ritual that the radio would go, move, suggested it was on the point of ruin, yeah. I don't know how they managed it, but there was some... There was some coincidence on it, but... whenever you brew too, if there's any infantry around, they could smell it at 500 yards, I'm sure that they would be coming up. So you were feeding, you know, but you got it, and they hadn't, so you were feeding.
How did you feel about the infantry? I mean, whether, you know, I mean, did you feel sorry for them, or did you envy them, or how did you feel about it?
I admired them. To trot around in open fields as they did, in open country, subjected to everything and anything, where we were comfortable against normal shelling or bullets or whatever. I mean, they were just like pinpricks to us, but to them, you know. But I still have enormous admiration for them.
Now, some infantry that you, I mean, will tell you that they hated the tanks because the tanks attracted shell fire, lots of it. And they when I say they hated the tanks, they wouldn't have been in them because of the shell fire. And I mean, were you aware of that side of it?
Yeah. If we picked up wounded infantry, as bad as they were, and some were very bad, you say, get me in the turret. And the strength that they had left, they'd fight it all the way. They would never get in the turret. I don't think I ever remember one. And as bad as they were, they'd sooner lay out on the engine covers at the back. They'd sooner lay there and be held on by their mates or whatever. But there was no way that they would get in. And they wouldn't. But we had a radio connection at the back for the infantry. Lieutenant or whatever, you could jack in and you could talk to him, or you could talk to you when they were involved with you, when moving up. You'd shield them, as it were, but we did attract shell fire, and shell fire to them was pretty horrendous. Really.
Now, one thing you mentioned is fairly obvious, but if you're locked in a tank for 18 hours, what did you do about it? Latrines.
Got out when you could, when there was a lull. I mean, that was it. But it wasn't something that came up for some reason. Everything shut down, you know. I mean, I don't know what the reason was, but you had to get out, if for nothing else, just a sort of stretch, you know. But yes, that. That was a problem, but everything shut down, really. Mostly.
And what's the next thing? I mean, you know, you were moving to the fighting at Borsi and things like that. What's the next thing you do remember moving forward?
I don't remember too much about any of that, to be honest.
What about the pros fillets?
Ah, yeah.
That might be the next thing. That's in August, mid-August.
Was it?
I think.
There were several things about fillets. I can remember running. We very rarely ever run through villages when there was a lot of noise going on. And running between houses, it wasn't the sort of best thing to do in many ways.
Why not?
Well, you're very vulnerable. I mean, if you're at the front door, somebody's in the front room with the old bazooka or whatever. So you were a bit vulnerable. Open country was our game, and to be close to the running down a street, as it were. But I can remember running down a street with the infantry were running down the back gardens, Jason Jones down the back gardens. This street had been blasted. There were a lot of dead horses. They used an awful lot of horse and carts, the Germans. I mean, they had these enormous panzer divisions, all highly mechanised, but that was all backed up with horse and carts. And there was quite a number of these that had been hit down this road. But I remember looking up at a window, and there was a face looking down at me, and and some wag had put this blasted model, it's a hair like a hairdresser's model or whatever, just the head and shoulders, and stuck a hat on it. And as I looked up, there was this thing looking down. And did it make you jump? God, I thought I'd catch that wag. But yeah, that was a fright. You had these sort of, I suppose, they were frightening them initially, but they certainly did make you jump. But that was running down this village, and it wasn't often that we needed to do that. If the infantry called up for help, then that's where you went. But I think when we laid up after Goodwood, I'm ready for the next bout, and I was in the turret cleaning at this point of time, and when one of the crew said, there's somebody here to see you, somebody's asking for you, and I thought, oh, here we go again, and I popped out the turret, and it was George's brother. He was KSLI, and he'd been then drafted in into the 8th RVs, which were parts only a field or so away. He knew what I was in, and I hadn't got a clue from him, but he'd walked over to see me. And as I popped out the turret, there was this bloke, immaculately dressed. He'd got creases down his uniform, boots shining, a sight that I hadn't seen for weeks. You know, you couldn't get anything more scrappy than the tank after these small situations. Black as new as milk. And there was this immaculate character, Vic, standing there. I could never get over that. And he found me, yeah. That was a lovely meeting, that was. Yeah, it really was. He told me then, and I think his troop were supporting the Hussars, the 23rd Hussars. So I could ask Mike, whenever we saw RVs, it was asked after Vic Hansen, and they'd tell me, well, he's over there, and he's still around, you know. And there were times too when you would be leading, and then you'd pull over, and then the Hussars would then go through, and I would stand on the turret there looking for the old Green Gary of it. And the best we managed on two or three occasions was a big wave, thumbs up as it were. And we never ever met again after that, through all of that, and it went right the way through. But we passed on odd occasions, and at one occasion in a village, we were called in because they were under fire from an 88 that was sitting on the hill. And while one of the troops went round the back, we went up to the village, and there was the Rifle Brigade Lieutenant. We said that the crew's going, there's another crew going round the back to deal with it. And he said, well, I've got a brain carrier up the road there, and you could actually see it in the ditch. And that was Vic, he was in the ditch with it. And every time they went to get out, so this thing fired at them. So that's why they called us up. But again, I couldn't even wait for him, he was too busy, he was occupied there. But we cleared the gun from the troop that went round the back and shot it up. But, so we got out of that. Other than that, we never actually met. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Now, just a couple more general questions. What about the risk of mines, anti-tank mines? Did that ever come into it?
I don't believe it ever did. I mean, you knew of them, but very few. I don't think we have any casualties from them. If you did, it was usually you'd lose a track, which was quite easily replaced or whatever. No, mines and personnel mines and things like that. I think normally they needed a fair bit of time to be able to put those things down, and if once you start rolling at a fair pace, they didn't usually have the time to do that. that you knew of them, and some did lose the odd track, but I never sort of, we never paid too much attention to them.
Didn't worry you?
Not particularly.
What about booby traps, various forms?
Don't think I ever saw any. We knew that he was clever enough to do booby trap, and we were told about them, what to expect, but no, I can't say I ever saw one, and I don't know anybody who was injured by one, but obviously there must have been casualties from them. Once we got rolling, the sort of situation changed quite dramatically, because after Pelé's already started rolling, it was totally different.
Now, what about the Flays thing then? What do you remember of that?
Only airstrikes. Talking about Thunderbolts hit us at one time, the American Air Force.
They hit you?
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, they came over. Where that was, I don't know, but they came over. They're a big plane, actually. You don't realise how big they were. They came swooping over the trees, firing machine guns, and we must have been further advanced than they recognised. But when you think they had white stars on top of the turrets, and when the first group, we had an orange mat that you could put out, a recognition mat. So we were all diving down the bins at the back to get these mats out, put these orange coloured mats down, and we had smoke grenades. Again, recognition smoke grenades. We were swinging them all over the place. Didn't make the slightest bit of difference. They still came in. I think they hit one of the scout colours or something.
Were they American?
Yeah, American Thunderbolts. They were quite frightening, these things came swinging in. And they talk about friendly fire, but there's nothing friendly about that. But I think they hit one of the scout cars. A couple of casualties from that, but nothing major. But a bit worrying.
Anything else around Flays?
Well, the air activity was enormous. The typhoons and that, they seem to be in the air. You can see them swimming down, and a lot of smoke. You could hear that they were getting bottled up. I can remember in one of the villages that they'd left fairly quickly, because I walked it. In one of the houses had this extension on it, on the side of it, and laid out on the ground, it was obviously a stores. And it was all motorcycle parts, and they were in little heaps. I wish you could come across it now, because you could have made one up virtually from what was standing there. They were the German motorcycle parts, pistons, forks, tank, air cleaners, and all manner of sorts. And very neat, in lovely little neat rows with a card with its part number and all the rest of it. But the character that had left in a hurry, he left his jacket hanging on the hook on the door. And the other character, we were laughing, because we were saying that he's not only lost his store, but he's lost his jacket, and he'll be had up for improperly dressed when he gets back. but that showed you how quick you overrun these things. They obviously didn't expect to sort of see you coming through the back door. Yeah, he must have had his shot that poor there. But Flays, I can remember, the thing that stays in my mind of that was that the roads around it were blocked with every conceivable sort of vehicle you could mention. And we stopped for a while.
German vehicles, old German, no.
German vehicles, lorries, trucks, you name it, they were all there. And we'd stopped. Nearby the road that was absolutely jammed with these vehicles, and we could hear this donk, 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 as if somebody was tapping something. curiosity got the better of us, and we went over to these traps, and the diesel was still running. Somebody got out and left it, you know what I mean? Obviously, you know, but it had been running there for hours, so it seemed. But the mayhem of the block roads and the prisoners that were being moved back.
What state were they in, the prisoners?
had this sort of glazed shop look, I suppose. I don't know whether they were happy that they were free of it, but they were mostly sullen, with the infantry sort of shepherding them back. It's not something that we could get involved in. We never had the manpower, is it cool?
Would there be insults exchanged? I mean,
No. Funny enough, you get a perishing look, but I mean, you can't call that an insult, you know what I mean?
But you didn't jeer at them?
Not likely, no. Not really. They were out of it, that bit done. No. I can remember once, and when this took place, I don't know, but I used to, in the turret, if you got out, you only had a pistol with you. So I used to hang on the radio socket, they had a guard, a small guard around it. And if there was anything loose, like an old Schmeiser or Sten or something like that, I used to hang it on that bracket. So if you were getting out in one hell of a hurry, you could grab that and take it with you. At least I felt a little bit, I had the feeling that if you were out on the ground with something, it was better than your pistol. And we pulled up by a hedge. Where this took place, I really can't tell you, but I got out and standing on the back, on the engine covers, and I heard this strange rustling sound. I can't even describe it, but when I looked into the field, there was a German soldier, and they had a cape. They used to have like a cape, gas cape, a waterproof cape, and he had that on, and he was trying to run across a ploughed field that was muddy, and he wouldn't make a very good job of it. And I screamed out into the sort of halt, and I think he must have done his best to try and stop. But his feet were going all over the place, and I fired a burst from this Sten or Schmeiser at him, and he stopped and he put his hands up, and we pulled him back, and he came back. He was white faced and shaking naturally, but we held out this cape, and there were holes in it where these bullets had gone through this cape, and not one had touched him, but one bullet going through about three folds. I mean, I felt sorry for him. I gave him a few cigarettes and sent him back down the line. I don't know who's more frightened, him or me.
Were there many, I mean, the people talk a lot about, because the German army actually had a lot of horse.
They did, yeah.
And there are a lot of reports of a lot of dead horses around.
There were, yeah, enormous amount. When we got further up, I remember seeing Belgians sort of coming out, carving up the horses to eat, because they used to eat horse meat, so we ate it later. So it was, to them, it was a bit of a gift. But I was astonished at the amount of horse transport that the Germans used, truly. Didn't match the image that you'd had with this high speed. Panzer sort of divisions. We were never always up against similar ones. I think it was the 12th, the 21st. You got to know their div signs after a while. Panzer Lehr, that was another one. And then Lehr was like L-E-H-R. Evidently he was a German military general of some sort in his day. But and they used to wear a band, with this information on, but generally the German infantry were because of the enormous bombardment of shelling and things, they absolutely smashed out. And totally glad I didn't get out of the way of it, to be honest. Downcast.
Towards the end, I mean, after that, there was a big breakthrough, and they sort of charged through in one night to Amiens.
Is that where we went down the lane? I seem to recall that somehow our recce, the intercourt board, I think it was, had found a roadway through. The road wasn't covered, and they managed to get through and find their way through this little lane to a bridge that we needed to cross. And they found this passage through, and we went down this lane at night. Dark, you've got no lights, and you knew when you was up to the tank in front, because you hit it virtually. You could feel the exhaust fumes getting hotter and hotter as you got closer and closer to these things. And it was frightening, the thought that you've got this enormous head each side of you, and you thought, if somebody gets knocked out down here, mate, well, you're really in trouble, because there was no way you were going to get out. You know, to reverse all the way back up, there was no chance. So if you thought, and you did, you thought, well, what the hell are we doing down here? I can clearly remember sort of trudging down this thing in the pitch black, banging up against the tank in front, and then when you stopped, the one behind you came up and clumped. The racket must have been enormous. Has anybody ever mentioned that? They have, no? That sticks out in my mind very clearly. But first light, it was another ball game. At first light, we were amongst German bakeries, workshops, stores. Run amok through these. I mean, it was something extraordinary.
What, they were in your line of march?
Yeah, that's where we found ourselves after this march, running amongst these field bakeries and stores and whatever.
Did you do it? I mean, did you shoot them up, Paul?
Yeah, not much. I'm quite happy. This was soft targets, you know, you'd heard about, but very rarely had the chance of sort of firing at. Mind you, they didn't set up, cooks and whatever, they really are not geared for combat. You know, some might have made a token gesture, but the majority of them just sort of packed in very quickly. But that's very clear on their mind, that night ride through that line.
About how far was it?
It seemed to go on forever, because you're only moving at, even you were doing 1 mile an hour, I suppose you were doing well, but it did seem to take a hell of a time. But it obviously was time right, because first light, we were where we wanted to be, the other side of it. So
did you cross the river?
Yeah, that bridge was empty. I can't imagine why. Evidently, it was said afterwards that two German units had failed to overlap. They both thought the other one was covered, or something to that effect. But that was a very important move. And then it all opened out. I can remember